This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. Temple University in North Philadelphia, with a student body of almost 40,000, plays a very important role in the region. Urban universities have unique responsibilities beyond providing an education for their student body, helping to nurture and support the surrounding community. Our guest, Neil Theobald, is finishing up his first year as Temple's 10th president. In a speech this fall, he laid out an ambitious agenda for the university that we'll be talking about today on Radio Times. One of the people he hired, David Boardman, is also our guest. He's the new dean of the School of Media and Communication. Neil Theobald comes to Philadelphia as a former senior vice president, chief financial officer at Indiana University. He's a first-generation college student, started his career teaching math. And Neil Theobald, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Wonderful to be here.
David Boardman was the executive editor at the Seattle Times for 10 years, had been at the paper for 30. The paper under his direction won several Pulitzer Prizes, including one for reporting in 2012. He's a Poynter Ethics Fellow and is also president of the American Society of News Editors. And David Boardman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks so much, Marty. Great to be here.
Nice to have you both here. And Neil, if I could begin with you and talk a bit about how you see the responsibility of Temple University.
We are the public university for Philadelphia, which has a financial part that the Commonwealth supports us so that we can keep our tuition down, but it's a much larger part about our public mission. We run the hospital, cares for more Medicaid patients than any other hospital in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We are the largest trainer of teachers for Pennsylvania's schools, so we are quite involved with K-12 education, more specifically with the School District of Philadelphia. As the public university for the city, we have to be very focused on the issues impacting the school district here and working with them of how we can not only train teachers, but get kids on campus so that they see university and a university degree as part of their life.
I want to pick up on all of that. To you, David Boardman, I'm curious about the transition from, as we were talking about before we went on the air, from the newsroom for the classroom. You've been here a couple of months. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. I'm really having the time of my life. I tell everybody I'm drinking from the fire hose, certainly, learning.
A different fire hose,
yeah,
is it not?
Yeah, I mean, it's a new coast, new city, my introduction to higher education. I had some connection with higher ed. I'm on the council that accredits schools of journalism and mass communication, so it wasn't entirely foreign to me. But being in the belly of the beast is something different. But Temple has so much incredible energy. I fell in love with the campus the second I walked onto it and saw the diversity and energy, and I'm having a blast.
But had you felt like you had done what you thought you could do as a journalist, as an editor?
Certainly the work's never done there, as you well know. I mean, it's a 24/7 job. But more and more I was feeling like in almost all American newsrooms these days, the focus is so much chasing nickels rolling around on the floor as we try to find a new business model. And you have to be so inwardly focused. And this seemed like an opportunity to be more outwardly focused and to affect the future in a couple of ways, both through developing the next generation of journalists and communicators. We're far more than a journalism school at Temple. And to really become part of the national and international dialogue on the future of these professions.
And again, I will pick up on all of that. Going back to you, Neil, and this is something I know that you have talked about, and frankly, I think everyone has talked about, the fact that so many students graduate from college and university with thousands, tens of thousands of dollars in debt, with a difficult job market waiting for them.
That's right. Now, it is the largest problem facing higher education is the level of debt that our students are graduating. So our top priority has to be, how do we graduate students with degrees but without stifling debt at the same time? The key to that, obviously, is cost containment, making sure our tuition is at a reasonable level. And Temple, I think, has done a very good job of that the last 2 years. We've increased tuition less than 1.5% a year. We also, though, that if you look at studies of student debt, the factor that is most contributes to the level of debt is how long it takes to graduate. We have seen over the last several decades a lengthening in time to degree. So the focus at Temple is on how do we get, for full-time students, how do we get that back towards a four-year graduation? That would cut a huge amount out of the debt burden.
And as I understand it now, that's just about a third of students get through in 4 years.
That is correct. Exactly.
And is it people dropping in, dropping out, taking time off to...
you know, there's been this idea that we will, you know, I'll take double major, I'll do some minors, I'll experiment. That's all part of college. You don't want to discourage that piece. But what you want to say to a full-time student is there is a path that will get you out of here in 8 semesters. And here is that path, and we need to incentivize that for students. We also need to offer classes when they're needed. That's a major factor is I'm well enough along, well, I can't get the course I need, so I'm going to stay another year. So from the university's side, our commitment is offering classes to move students along. From the student side, they have to follow the academic advice they get and take those classes they're offered.
Is that an issue?
It certainly is. And they have to earn the grades that allow them to go to the next level. So it's a dual commitment there that I think we have real potential to move down that level of debt that is just – I have kids myself in their 20s. So many of their peers are the careers they go into, even if they're going to be able to get married, buying a house. All of these things that they went to college to be able to do are being limited by the fact that they've taken on so much debt in the process. We have to address that.
And do you know that the typical student from Temple University, when they graduate, what kind of debt? What kind
about
of debt?
$30,000, wow. Which is not far from the national average, if you can imagine that. And obviously there's distributions, there are students who graduate with less, but if you think $30,000 in debt that you're going to have to pay off over the next 20 years,
sure.
That limits, if you have a partner that also has similar debt, that is a huge barrier. Now, as long as you have a full-time job, you get in the job market, you're successful, all of that can be done. Where the massive problem here is kids who go part-time, take on a lot of debt, and then end up at a low-wage job coming out. It very much limits their opportunities.
Let me go back to you, David, and thinking about the education of future journalists.
And speaking of low-wage jobs, right?
that was exactly my segue, which is, but I'm curious even beyond that, and we can get to low-paying jobs in the world of journalism, but nonetheless, how do you envision the future for journalists? And it's such a quickly evolving situation.
It absolutely is. And you know, I get the question, of course, from a lot of students and parents as to, is this something that's worth getting educated in? Will there be any jobs on the other end? And I tell people, it's absolutely the most challenging time in this profession. And again, not only journalism, which we teach, but also in advertising and strategic communication, PR, these other fields that are areas of study in our school. It's the most exciting time as well. It's challenging, but it's exciting, and there's never been more opportunity for right. people coming right out of school to help redefine and reinvent a profession. And I saw it out there in my own newsroom. 23, 24, 25-year-olds we were bringing into the newsroom were educating 20- and 30-year veterans and really changing the dynamic because they understand more about how people consume news now. They understand more about the technology. So the opportunities for young people now are enormous. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more. We need to put a lot more emphasis on entrepreneurship. There are a lot more 1- and 2- and 3-people shops in journalism. Not very many of these students are going to go do what I did and work in one place for 30 years. And they have to understand that. But most of them are undaunted by it, which is one of the things I love. Well, there's not a lot of fear.
They're young,
always.
Right?
Yeah.
But the question is, how do you, I mean, in sort of nuts and bolts terms, how do you monetize that? I mean, how do you make a living? How do you start to pay off that?
Well, you know, what we're equipping them with is the technological ability to go out and work in various technologies, you know, whether it's Final Cut Pro on working video, audio technology. I mean, they know how to go out there and do a variety of things. They all have focuses. We're not a place that believes everybody has to be great at everything. They do come out with a focus, but they come out with a range of tools. And there's no easy answer for how do you monetize it. If there was, you know, the journalism business would be in much better shape than it is. But if anybody is going to thrive in that, it's going to be our students. We give them real-world experience. We have a program we call Philadelphia Neighborhoods where they're out covering neighborhoods, getting real-world experience in a variety of tools, and at the same time connecting with what President Theobald said, we're serving the community. They're out covering neighborhoods that legacy media are not covering in this city.
Do you worry about long-form investigative journalism? It feels like there's no time, there's no patience, perhaps no money for this kind of journalism.
I'm quite concerned about it. It's what most of my career was in, and it's, I think, the most important thing that journalists do. I'm optimistic in that it seems to be getting some traction nationally with philanthropists and foundations, but not so much locally here, and it's actually one of the things that I've already started to work on in some conversations with some local foundations.
What's the thing that keeps you up at night as a president of a sprawling university?
Oh, the hospital is clearly
the hospital.
With the Accountable Care Act, we are the safety net hospital in North Philadelphia. And the Accountable Care Act is going to make some dramatic changes, but it's not quite clear what all those changes are going to be. So that's the one you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you think, how do we get from where we are now to the future? It is easily the biggest problem facing Temple University.
And with no obvious way out at this point?
No,
this is a city with a high level of poverty.
Yeah,
too.
Absolutely. I mean, if it was clearer how all of this was going to roll out, then you could begin to plan. But you're planning for so many different eventualities. That is clearly, if you don't know the problem, it's hard to know what the solution is exactly.
And I'm also curious, and there was a piece you had in the paper about a kind of a consortium between other Pennsylvania universities saying that this state can be a model for manufacturing going forward.
Given,
and it has a nice storied past.
It sure does. I mean, given the strength of universities in the Commonwealth, that is the future of the economy, is well-educated people combining with the resources that we have here, the strong businesses we have here. There is a place where you see an obvious path forward in terms of taking the research that we generate. I mean, in Temple, we generate about $180 million in research. But then getting that to the market, creating new industries, creating jobs, the kind of thing that David was talking about here with small companies, entrepreneurship. One thing we're really pushing is that entrepreneurship has always been seen in the business school. That was the province of the business school. But entrepreneurship is something that people in media are going to need to know, people in music are going to need to know. We're trying to get entrepreneurship and innovation as part of the curriculum across the university and not simply for people that are going to run the business side.
And you're nodding your head, David.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something that I've actually, as recently as yesterday, was having a conversation with our business school dean about, and he very much supports that, just entrepreneurship and innovation education throughout the curriculum.
And for students then, and we're almost up in a break here, but not thinking as you and I did to some degree, being in a job for 30 years.
Right. And the students are excited about that. I mean, they're bubbling with ideas for their own businesses. They're getting experience out there. For instance, we have, and I've just learned about this, we have in our school, we have our own recording label. It's called Bell Tower Records. And they're in there learning from soup to nuts the music recording industry, as an example, where they'll be able to walk out of there and actually have a job.
That's David Boardman, who joins us along with Neil Theobald, and we are putting the spotlight on Temple University in this hour of Radio Times. Neil Theobald is the 10th president of Temple University, took over the job in January 2013. He hired David Boardman as the dean of the School of Media and Communication at Temple University. Any questions or comments, give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Simpson Meadows, a retirement community in Downingtown, PA, in Chester County. Managed by Simpson Senior Services, a nonprofit with a long-standing tradition of care. Simpson Meadows provides personal care for senior adults, along with memory care, respite, and independent living. A specially designed personal care neighborhood staffed with licensed nurses provides assistance with daily tasks to help residents remain as independent as possible. More at simpsonmeadows.org.
Hi, I'm Bill Morazzo. As president of WHYY, I thank so many of you for supporting our public media services. Maybe you live in one of the nearly 100,000 households in our area that supported us this year, or you're an employee of a company that has matched those gifts. Perhaps you've donated a used car or volunteered your time. Your kindness allows us to expand our services on air and online. So as the nation gives thanks, please know how thankful we are at WHYY for you.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, heritage turkeys are bringing a different flavor to the Thanksgiving table and a different color to the barnyard.
The heritage breeds are a lot of different colors, from black to gray to kind of a lavender blue color. The commercial birds are all white.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with David Boardman, the new Dean of Temple University School of Media and Communication, and Neil Theobald. He's the president of Temple University, began the job earlier this year, and we wanted to pick their brains about what Temple is up to and some of the plans and goals for this region and for this university. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Neil, I think it's interesting that you're a first-generation college student in your family, and your dad, or I guess your parents, thought you would be an electrician.
Well, I've been accepted to the Electrician's Apprentice Program. I come from Peoria, Illinois, and the town employer is the Caterpillar Tractor Company. All through school, other than my teachers, I really didn't know many people who'd gone to college. It's out of my graduating class. There are 10 college graduates out of 450.
Really?
So it was, you could go into the plant, earn a marvelous living right out of school, and it simply wasn't part of the culture. Well, in February of my senior year, someone came from a university and said, you know, this kid, we'd give him a full scholarship to go.
And I thought you were a good student.
I was a good student, right. Yes. I'd always liked to read and things like that. And went home, and my mother thought it was a great idea. My father thought I was crazy. You know, why would you give up an electrician is at the high end of the skilled trades in Caterpillar. He'd worked at Caterpillar. My grandfather worked at Caterpillar. All my brothers work at Caterpillar.
The rebel in the family.
Yeah, I mean, in my inaugural, I mentioned the only time that I saw my father with a tear in his eye was when he put my case on the train to go east. He knew the world was changing because his world had been very stable for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And he was right. I never did come back.
And you never did come back.
Sure.
And at the same time, college or university isn't for everybody, is it?
It is not. No. We've got to find that education level. What is for everybody, though, is like the apprentice program at Caterpillar that no longer exists. When I came out, industries would provide skilled training to students. Now, if you want to do that, you have to go out and do it on your own and pay for it yourself. But we need to make that avenue open to students, because being a manual laborer in the current world, you're going to be competing with people all over the world who are manual laborers, and the wage is going to be at a much lower level than you can support a family. So we need to work with, whether it's skilled trades, whether it is academic work, whether it is applied work, all of those things, we need to make sure that that's affordable and students have access to it.
How'd you get interested in journalism, David?
You know, like a lot of people who went into it, I was pretty good at writing. And it seemed like, well, maybe I'll do that. And I got a scholarship offered to Northwestern. I say I'm a one-and-a-half generation.
I got you.
My dad had a college degree, but only by the time he got it, by the time he had four kids already and made his way through night school. So, yeah, it was an opportunity to go to a great school and not have to pay the full fare. And I fell in love with it.
What'd you fall in love with?
You know, the ability to really have an impact, to not only write, but to really, you could see it really impacted people's lives. My first regular job was a little weekly paper in the San Juan Islands in Puget Sound, where I covered the police, the school board, the city council. I wrote the wedding announcements. I learned how to spell stephanotis and baby's breath. I wrote the obituaries. And I really learned the power of the written words, because I saw those people the next morning at the breakfast counter and saw how it impacted people's lives. So it's a profound way to make a living.
And is still writing still at the heart of journalism?
Yeah, I think it still is. Even for broadcast journalism, radio, television, web production, I mean, still the power of the writing and shape and construction. Mm. Well, writing and reporting. reporting probably even more so, frankly. I mean, one of the things that we are starting to talk a lot about in our school is I want students to come out, even more important than any kind of technological skill, I want them to come out of that school with what I call the courage of curiosity, the ability to be able to ask really tough questions, and the skill set to go out and find the answers. And that's in great shortage in our society right now.
And that requires homework.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it requires actually doing your homework
on
a subject matter.
Yeah.
And had you been thinking about getting out of journalism or thinking about a university job?
I was blessed. I worked for a family-owned company for my entire career and loved my job, loved Seattle, of course, which is a great city. But I got called by a headhunter for this and another university job at a school with a little bigger national reputation. But the second I stepped onto the campus at Temple, I just felt something magical, and I really fell in love mm-hmm. with it. And what struck me is, if you walk that campus, as you have,
I have,
this place looks like America in a way that most college campuses would die for. And it's not just this kaleidoscope of color and class and age, but these students are walking and talking together across those fault lines, and that you just don't see anywhere else. And so for me, as an educator in the communications field, what a gold mine that is, you know, to be able to shape this school in a way that we will produce communicators in all these fields, journalism, advertising, strategic communication, PR, academics, communicators who can communicate across culture. What gold that'll be in the 21st century. Mm. So that's going to be our national niche.
Anil, I was reading that at Temple University, something like 40% of the student body is, quote-unquote, non-white.
That's correct. Yeah, we are highly diverse. As David says, we have a diversity that most universities would love to have. And they're not. And it's not just racial. As he says, I go in and go to the dorms and eat dinner, and the kids, they are just – they are so happy to be in college. They're so appreciative of the experiences they've got. They work so hard. They're so pragmatic. It is the students here. I've been at the University of Washington, Indiana. This is my third stop. The students here are quite different than they are at either of the other two stops, and they're just wonderful to work with.
Hmm.
Best part of the job.
And you teach. Do you teach
yes,
freshmen?
Yes, do. Teach incoming freshmen. Class on – my wife and I co-teach it, actually, on organizational change. I'm new. They're new. How do you come into a new situation – determine what's going well, what isn't going well, things that aren't going well, what do you need to change right away and what can wait, who's going to help you fix it, who's not. So it's a year-long course, and in fact, I have class tonight at 5:30, and I get observations about the university. You couldn't find consultants that could give you that kind of, because they care so much. Right. They have a unique perspective. And then I've put them in consulting teams, and they're going to actually develop solutions to the problems of Temple University that they've identified rather than what I think is the problem. What do they think are the issues that need to be addressed?
And do you think more tenured teachers or tenured professors and others with long-time experience should be teaching freshman classes?
Absolutely.
In fact, do you think enough don't – I mean that no. it's an issue or a problem?
Well, I can tell you, in my previous employment, we decentralized the budget down so that all the money goes to the schools. And here, that's where we're going to start next year. And the major change you saw was more senior faculty teaching at freshman level classes. Students want to be taught by the top faculty. And
their parents want them to get those teachers.
And so you generated more enrollments that way. So absolutely, I think to have our senior people working with those new minds, because they ask the best questions, because they haven't been there long enough to kind of know the culture, and they give you that more unvarnished view of, well, why would you do it that way?
Mm.
Darn good question.
Yeah. Well, questions are important, are they not, mm-hmm. David?
Absolutely. In fact, I tell my faculty that they have both the burden and the benefit of my naivete about higher education. So I get to ask a lot of, quote, dumb questions, you know, for at least a while here. They're cutting me a break.
I believe in dumb questions. That's David Boardman. He's the new dean of the School of Media and Communication at Temple University. Also with us is Neil Theobald, and he is the new president or latest president, mm-hmm. I should say, not exactly new because he's had the job since the beginning of the year, January 13th, Temple's president. And we have a whole bunch of callers here at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And you can send us an email with any questions or comments you might have. And again, that address, radiotimes@whyy.org. Let me get, looks like Chris from Westchester to join us on Radio Times. And Chris, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm currently a student at Temple, and what we're all concerned about is, you know, how are we going to keep improving our academics and investing in academics while keeping tuition low?
Wow.
I know a lot of people are, you know, a lot of people are choosing Temple now over other area schools mm-hmm. because of the tuition. Where, you know, I have friends who are accepted into other schools, Villanova, know, other competition, and they're choosing Temple.
And the question is how to provide that good academic education, but without putting people too much into debt. Go ahead, Neil.
Well, one, obviously, is keeping tuition down, and the key to that is I fundraise like crazy. I mean, that's a big part of the president's job now, is to go out and interact with people that care about affordability, that care about student debt. We doubled our undergraduate scholarship funds that are paid from that source this year, which, you know, while that allows us to have the funds to pay the teachers, to pay the light bill and everything like that, but the student ends up not having to foot the bill. So that's a key part of it. And we have had great success in terms of, as you mentioned, recruiting better students. Our average SAT was up 19 points this year, which is a historic increase. You know, it's affordability, but it's also the quality of the instruction they receive. This is as good an undergraduate education as I've seen at my three stops. And we need to continue to hire top faculty and retain top faculty while holding the cost down mostly through fundraising. The state is unlikely to step in with large amounts of money. So your three sources are tuition, state, or gifts. The state isn't going to happen. We don't want to raise the tuition, so we've got to do it through gifts.
And how competitive is it to find the kind of professors you're looking for?
Extremely. We've had a great year. We're doing something a little different than other universities. There's been a large move towards non-tenured faculty, which means that the people that are in the tenure line group, there isn't as much demand. So we've actually shifted over. We have we hired 54 tenure line faculty this year, the most in the history of Temple University.
Well, let me get looks like Bob from South Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. And Bob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, President Theobald.
Hello, Bob.
How are you? I am an adjunct professor at Temple University.
Okay.
You talked a lot about hiring full-timers.
Mm-hmm.
Some people may not know that adjuncts, I think there's most of the students and their parents don't know, are part-time, contingent, work semester to semester, with no benefits. I want to know whether you are aware that we haven't had a raise in over 5 years, that our pay is now significantly below comparable universities in the area. And we also have no one, as far as I'm aware of, in the administration that we can come and talk to and interact with.
Okay.
We are a pool of marginalized and neglected workers, and I wonder if you have any thoughts about what to do about that.
Bob, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Go ahead.
Yes, I do. One thing we have moved towards is, as long as we know that we're going to be teaching the course over a period of time and the performance of the part-time faculty member is satisfactory, that we are looking and we have issued some long-term contracts. Because as long as we're going to teach the course, it's to our advantage to keep excellent part-time faculty teaching at Temple University. So to provide some stability in those situations. The salary part is, in the 5 years obviously predates me, but you know, the highest priority we've got is attracting, retaining faculty while we hold down the cost. So that the extent we can do both of those at the same time, it's a balancing act.
Well, and I hear embedded in this question about the kind of perhaps reliance or over-reliance on adjunct professors, and we've done shows about the fact that they feel like itinerant teachers cobbling together a salary that they can barely live on.
No, that's right. I mean, this has been the response. I know at Temple, our state appropriation has gone down $50 million per year. So there, how do you respond to a lower level of support from the Commonwealth? And the answer here, and the answer almost everywhere across higher education, has been to go to more part-time faculty.
Yeah.
We are trying to turn that. As I mentioned, we hired 54 full-time faculty this year. We're searching for a larger number next year. But there's no way that we're going to go back to only full-time faculty. The support from the Commonwealth and what we want to charge in tuition just isn't great enough to generate the revenue to do that.
Let me do a weird segue here over to you, David Boardman, then we'll get back to our callers. And just because you're heading up the School of Media and Communication, do you worry about the future of journalism?
Yeah, you couldn't be in it and not worry about it. I have to say I'm confident about the long-term future, because I just know that the democracy cannot survive without it, and we will find a way to sustain it. But I'm quite concerned about getting from here to there. Obviously, nobody has found a business model answer. There are large national organizations like the New York Times that are finding some way to sustain themselves. But at the regional and local level, obviously we're really struggling, and you can see it obviously right here in our own backyard, and the troubles that the Inquirer and other local media are facing. So I'm certainly concerned, and I actually think there's a significant role for universities to play in that, both in terms of a workforce that can gain experience and is much more technologically astute than many of the professionals in the field are. And the research is something we haven't talked about, but a big part of our school, as any research university, a big part of our school are people who are doing scholarly research in these fields. And one of the things that we're talking a lot about in my school is to connect the research with the practice and have research inform practice and vice versa. The things that our professors are out there studying in terms of audiences and messaging, they can really help reinvent these fields, I think, and resuscitate them.
There's civic journalism. I mean, the journalism whose goal is to improve a community, an organization, an idea.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we did in Seattle that I was very proud of, and I know to some extent even WHYY is doing some of that here, is we made ourselves a hub for this emerging and changing ecosystem of hyperlocal sites and sites that are both geographic communities and communities of interest. I'm looking for a way that Temple can help play that role as well. I think it's a natural role for us in the community, particularly inside the city of Philadelphia.
And I think sometimes people often forget about the local or the hyper-local, I mean, which is really where people live.
Yeah, and there's a lot more creativity being done that way on the journalistic side, I have to say, than there is on the business side. And we have to figure out some financial formulas that will sustain the journalism.
Have you found, and I'm going back to that piece you had in the Inquirer about this consortium of universities, right. have you figured out, and I think there's $50 million on the table for this project, sort of where you're going to go next, or what's the first step to trying to figure this out?
Yeah, I mean, the solutions are broad enough that the people we hire have to be interdisciplinary. They have to work across fields, because there are very few problems that are only cancer. Well, cancer, their learning is tied to nutrition, is tied to genomics. So you need people I talk about on the rim of the profession. So with the $50 million, which our trustees have approved, is to hire new generation of faculty that work across disciplines, bioengineering rather than just biology or engineering, in those fields. So we've identified six different areas, and we're going to be, over the next 5 years, hiring faculty members in each of these areas so that we can solve the actual problems of this community. I mean, we get a lot of questions coming to us from the school district, from the police, and obviously in the healthcare field is the largest, of how do we address these problems. We need to bring a broader base to support to answer those questions.
Let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation and our callers. We are talking about Temple University in this hour of Radio Times. The voice you just heard is Dr. Neil Theobald. He's Temple University's 10th president, began the job earlier this year in January 2013. Also with us is David Boardman, and he's the dean of the School of Media and Communication at Temple. A couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
What is The Pulse? Stories at the heart of health science and innovation. WHYY-FM's newest original program launches Friday morning, December 6th at 9. The critical issues and innovations as told by patients, doctors, researchers, and everyday people. Plus, an active and growing online multimedia destination at whyy.org/thepulse. The Pulse launches Friday morning, December 6th at 9 on WHYY-FM.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a rising star in politics when he was crippled by polio at the age of 39. On the next Fresh Air, historian James Tobin says despite modern misconceptions, Roosevelt's polio was well known to the public and even became an important part of his personal narrative as he campaigned for the White House. Tobin's book is The Man He Became. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Blended families with children have a lot on their plates. Defining roles, understanding loyalties, paying attention to one another's needs, noticing what works and what doesn't work to foster a healthy stepfamily. On the next Voices in the Family with Dan Gottlieb, we'll hear from blended families expert Patricia Papernow, author of Surviving and Thriving in Stepfamily Relationships. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. Neil Theobald, the new president of Temple University, along with six other Pennsylvania University presidents, announced a plan this fall to make the state a center for manufacturing. David Boardman, the new dean of Temple's School of Media and Communication, wrote a commentary in the Philadelphia Inquirer telling Philadelphians that in spite of their reputation, they really are nice people. And they are both of them are guests in this hour of Radio Times, and again taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. And David, we all got a chuckle out of your commentary because, yes, Philadelphia does have a reputation, and it hasn't been perfect, I understand.
Yeah, my wife and I had a startling introduction to the city in which we witnessed a horrendous beating. It was on our first trip here to look for a place to live, so that was a little bit rough. But then once we actually arrived here, we have been so struck by how open and friendly the people are here. And I tell my friends back in Seattle, I said, you know, the people in Seattle are far more likely to flip you off.
Really?
But they're also far more likely to say, hey, you look lost. Can I help you? Hey, I'll walk you there. I mean, they're just so open. We talk about the elevator test. In Seattle, you get in an elevator and people find the geometrically farthest point from you and you never get any eye contact. Here, you know the names of their kids before you get out of the elevator.
So I had no idea. Yeah. What do you think about internships? And, of course, that's become quite a controversial issue.
Yeah, it certainly has. It's a real key part of the education that we offer at Temple. We make a lot of connections with media outlets in advertising, PR, and journalism and broadcasting. And we facilitate internships for our students. We think it's an essential part of their education. But as you know, there's a lot of controversy right now as to whether those should be paid, unpaid. We certainly favor seeing the students get paid for their work. And in most cases, they are getting paid. There are some situations where we're actually they work for credit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we try to work with the employer and look at what's working for them, what works best for the students.
Well, and there have been charges of, you know, either not of doing meaningless work in an internship.
Yeah, in our case, the internships are highly structured and supervised, and nobody's out there just getting coffee for credit.
Or picking up someone's dry cleaning.
Yeah.
Let me get to, it looks like Reverend Ada to join us from Norris Square. Reverend Ada, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm actually very near Temple, and I'm after 8th Street. And between Fishtown and that area. So on one side, you got gentrification coming from the river, and on the other side, there's economic development coming from Temple. However, you know, we are in a pocket that is predominantly Latino, and I'm interested. I'd like to know if there's a strategic plan that is geared toward, that focuses on that Latino community. I'm really proud that, you know, the 26th District Police District of Philadelphia a couple years ago had this community policing program with Temple, and that was phenomenal. And I do know that a lot of our students start off at community college and end up at Temple. However, you know, when I think of what Penn has done across in West Philly, I don't see that happening in our area. I'll try to be as brief as I can, but our church has a recording studio that we want to use also for teaching journalism. We're talking about democracy and blogging and all that. We also have a silkscreen T-shirt company, because we need to. We are in the fourth hungriest district in the country. We're poor, and it seems like it would be a perfect fit to have your you know, professional skills. But I'm wondering, is there a strategic, specific plan for the Latino community of Philadelphia?
And Reverend, I have a question for you. What's the name of your church?
It's called the West Kensington Ministry at Norris Square.
The West Kensington Ministry at Norris Square. Let me give our guests a chance to respond.
Yeah, a number of plans along those lines. One is we have a 2020 scholarship plan, which the zip codes around Temple, we provide a number of scholarships to students in those zip codes. I met with them this fall. Fabulous group of kids. Clearly, our healthcare outreach with the clinics that we have in the neighborhoods, a great deal of interaction there. We do a great deal. I've met several times with Superintendent Height as far as interacting with the school districts that are in our area. We place student teachers there. We do professional development. So it's, you know, the largest pieces are through scholarships, schools, and hospital. But we have community outreach in terms of when we had the new Morgan Hall, the people we hired, rather than hiring students, we hired people from the neighborhood to work there. So we're very much in terms of trying to create job opportunities. And I send me a note on this idea of what you would do in terms of entrepreneurship. We'd be glad to look at something like that.
Yeah, anything you want to add to that, Dave?
Yeah, I was also going to offer, if you would just shoot me a note or an email, I'll definitely want to connect our recording experts with your folks and see what we can do there. I also wanted to say that ethnic media is increasingly a focus of our school, and we're out right now recruiting for a professor with an expertise in ethnic media because we really want to work with the community press in improving that aspect of journalism.
Reverend Nada, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Rose from Berwyn has to say. Rose, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hey. I have been a long-time listener, about 22 years, actually. My youngest was a baby, and it's so exciting to be on the show.
Well, that's great. Rose, go ahead.
My youngest daughter is a junior in high school, and she is considering going to Temple to study theater.
Great.
And which is great. We're real supportive of her. As a parent, though, I'm concerned about the safety.
Mm-hmm. Concerned about the safety?
Yes.
Of the North Philly campus.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead.
If you look at statistics, and I'm a parent myself, my daughter's in college, the other two have graduated from college, and statistics aren't enough, but in terms of actual incidences on the area that is Temple campus, we are the safest campus in Philadelphia, and that's because we have 60 police that we employ in the Temple Police Department. We are very conscious of we're moving students onto campus. We'll have 5,500 students living on. We have 5,500 students living on campus this year. We've worked with the neighborhood to bring more of them closer to campus that do live off campus. We have about 12,000 students who live within a couple blocks of the campus. So the goal there is to have that area that the police patrol and have as many undergraduates as possible living within that area.
Rose, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I mean, town gown situations, that seems to come with almost any college or university.
It absolutely does. In small town Bloomington, Indiana, as well as
true?
Big city Philadelphia, yes.
This is just quoting from the Inquirer. I guess it was last week. A Temple University president, Neil Theobald, said publicly this week that an on-campus football stadium likely would be part of the university's next master plan, expected to be released in 2014. Why is football so important on college campuses, including Temple's?
Well, it is our front door to a lot of our alumni. It is the we get the message out. We're on TV every week, and more people see that than anything else. You know, we did a game, we played at Notre Dame this year. We had 1,000 people come to South Bend, Indiana. If we had put on a philosophy conference across the street from campus, we wouldn't have got a tenth of that many people. So it simply is a way that we can connect with our alumni. You know, the football stadium, we play at the Eagles Stadium, and, you know, we're talking with them about a rent. They want to increase the rent substantially. If we're going to pay that much money, we want to look and say, is there a way we can actually do this on campus and make it much more available to our students and our alumni and tie it to the academic side?
Is that sort of depressing that you can't get 1,000 people to a philosophical conference? I mean, I understand that you can't, but nonetheless, that sports is so important to alumni.
It absolutely is. Well, in society, I mean, if you look in even pro sports, it isn't just at the college. I'm not an NFL fan, which is an unusual thing to come to Philadelphia and not follow the NFL. But I actually have to read the paper in the morning, or I can't have many conversations because I need to know, you know, nor just to chat with people, what did the Eagles do yesterday?
And it's been better this year. You're a squash player, though, right?
I do play squash.
You do?
Yes.
Let me see what looks like Cullen from Chester, Pennsylvania has to say. Cullen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Hi, Colin. Go ahead. You're on the air. Let's pull that down because that sounds really terrible. Let me try. Let's Dave from Horsham joining us today in Radio Times. Hi, Dave. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
My daughter's third semester at Temple. She came in as an honors student directly into STHM.
Great.
And boy, you talk about internships. Are they fantastic?
Mm. Excellent.
It's one of the, I believe, only two schools in the country that teach what they teach. And what I was wondering is, her being in the honors program,
mm-hmm.
I believe there's only maybe five kids in her grade that are in honors in STHM.
Mm-hmm.
What is the school doing to attract more of the the higher level,
sure.
frankly, more involved students?
Mm-hmm.
The student population, like you say, is very diverse and very into being there and want to be there and like being there. But she doesn't see, certainly, especially in STHM, the number of honor students, the kids that are really going to be the movers and shakers of the cruise industry and hotel industry, things like that.
Dave, I appreciate the call to Radio Time. STHM.
Tourism and hospitality.
Man. Okay.
School of business. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the answer is exactly what you've talked about. You make sure that students have a great experience. The best marketing you do to high school students is word of mouth from people they know who went there who said, this is a really good place to go. The niche really for Temple University is high ability, lower income. We educate more Pell recipients and the rest of the universities in Philadelphia combined. This is where your middle-class kid, your lower-class income kid who's of top ability goes to school.
Mm-hmm.
So we, in that group, we make sure they have a great experience, they get good faculty, we provide financial aid to the extent we can, and that's the way that you grow those programs.
Dave, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And again, you can call that phone number 1-888-477-9499. How many veterans on campus?
No, large number. Yeah, we were received a national award as one of the top universities for veterans to attend. We have someone who's their full-time job, is dealing with all of the issues because there's obviously a number of programs from the federal government that we need to make sure kids are plugged into. They're not kids. They're not kids.
No.
That our students are plugged into. And we've had great success. They do a wonderful job in that office.
And this is as a result of the GI Bill of a couple of years ago.
You got it.
As you look at the students that will be graduating into journalism, what are the kinds of, I mean, we talked a little bit about the having the internet skills, the writing skills, the curiosity skills, reporting skills. Where do you see them going? And do you see them having their small sort of hyper-local news department?
I mean, we're seeing already, I'm getting to know students and very much like Neil, I'm making a point of spending time with students because they're our customers. And I've had a couple of meet and greets with students and every day I've spoken to classes every day. I'm trying to have some connection. And particularly as I'm talking to seniors, I'm seeing that there's the whole range. It really does run the gamut from major news organizations. Mm-hmm. We have an outstanding student who did an internship and is now a part-time employee of the McClatchy News Service Washington Bureau, which is a renowned reporting machine.
Yes, love McClatchy.
She's likely to be offered a job there. We have other students who are looking at starting their own businesses in a variety of ways and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
I often encourage students, just as I related, don't be afraid to start small because that's where you'll really get that fundamental experience. And in journalism and again in these other associated fields of advertising and PR, the beauty of it is your work speaks for itself. It's much more easy to see your actual work product than it is in some other fields. So you get that first job or two. You do a great job, and off you go.
And when there's breaking news, do you sort of wish you were back in the newsroom?
There's been a couple of times where I've twitched a little bit, and election night was a big one because I had worked every single election night, even when I became the boss, every single primary and general election night since 1979. So I did break out into a cold sweat that night, but I sent a pizza to the Seattle Times newsroom just to remind them that I was watching.
Yeah.
There is something about sort of not knowing, certain cases, sort of how things are going to end.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was adrenaline there. But You know, I have not looked back for a second because the adrenaline that I get walking through the hallways of that school every day, it's every bit as terrific.
So what do you hope in 5 years, let's say we have you back, what do you hope to accomplish in the next 5 years?
Well, to have a set of deans that are as excellent as David. I mean, that's the role he plays, those are the folks in the engine room that actually run the university. I am out doing legislative things, donor things, alumni things, athletic events. The people that actually make this place work really well are the David Boardmans of the world. So that is, have a team of people, have students that are having a great educational experience and that aren't incurring so much debt. I think those are really the three pieces.
And are you concerned that something like a liberal arts education is not going to have the value because it doesn't give you those, those tangible skills?
Right. I think the way that we are addressing that is across all students rather than having a select group of students that become an English major or a philosophy major. What are those parts of liberal arts that all students need to have that? And we're going through that right now as a campus and making sure everyone has a base in liberal arts from which they go into media or they go into music or whatever, or science.
On that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Neil Theobald, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Pleasure to have you on. And again, he's Temple University's 10th president, a job he took over January 2013. David Boardman, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Marty, and you're welcome. Certainly proud of you as a Temple graduate.
Well, I am a Temple grad, allegedly, anyway. And he's the new dean of the School of Media and Communication at Temple University. I say allegedly because I didn't go to graduation, so I don't have that little piece of paper, but I do believe I got all those credits. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including Facebook and Twitter and podcasts and satellite radio. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Debbie Builder, and Emily Bryant. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.